We might get a start, everybody. It's 1:30, so let me welcome everybody to the second CRIG Forum for the year. The topic of the CRIG Forum today is rethinking reference services in a mobile world. I'm going to pass it over to Derek Whitehead in a second from Swinburne, the university librarian from Swinburne, to make a few introductory remarks, but maybe just by way of introduction to this session today, I'll just say that, you know, I guess today's session is about looking at how, tapping into how we're all rethinking reference services in light of, you know, a world that's become more fluid and more flexible, wanting to provide point of need help to library users and customers and so on. And inevitably that's going to focus a little that's going to focus on mobile technologies, but not exclusively so. We're interpreting that idea of a mobile world in terms of the changes that are that everybody is experiencing in the world today, and how therefore they access and use information. A little bit about the program today. We're very lucky to have our first couple of speakers, Annie Yee from RMIT, talking about a recent trip she made under a Call scholarship to investigate what some American libraries are doing in terms of mobile technologies, rethinking their reference services and so on. And we also have Claire O'Dwyer, who's from Deakin University, who'll be talking about what they've been doing at Deakin, I guess, to rethink some of how their reference services are provided. We'll have half an hour, our usual half an hour tea and coffee break in the middle, and in the second half, really pleased that we can have an all-in panel discussion, I guess, or a series of presentations from different libraries across Melbourne. And this is one of the things that I really like about the CRIG Forum, in that it really does provide us with a chance to share information, see what's happening at other libraries. So very happy to have those four people come and talk about what they're doing in terms of some of those rethinking of reference services. I think at the end there's a tour of the Swinburne Library, so people who would like to go on the tour of the Swinburne Library, that should happen around 4 o'clock or so. Okay, so before we introduce the first speaker, I might hand it over to Derek to just say a few words. Sorry, Derek, I need to pass this around between speakers. Yeah.
Okay, I'm just here to welcome you. And unfortunately, I can't stay for the session, but there's plenty of Swinburne people here, so we'll recycle all of the lessons. I guess one could say that thinking about reference and mobile devices at the point, and we've surveyed our users on this one, where about 98% have a mobile phone and something over 90% have a laptop, is possibly a little late in the day, but I guess we'll learn our lessons now and see how we can adapt ourselves to the mobile world. Do go on the tour. You will see a Swinburne Library as it is now. You can fix that moment in your eyes, because we're hoping to add another 1,500 square metres to it over the next 6 months, and when you come back for the next CRIG meeting or whenever, we hope it'll be much different. But we're moving the library into the remainder of the building that we next door that we partly occupy. So I hope you enjoy the session this afternoon. It's a interesting topic, one that we're all thinking about, and enjoy being at Swinburne. Thank you.
Sorry, excuse me fumbling through my papers and trying to wrestle this microphone at the same time. Our first speaker today is Annie Yee from RMIT. Annie is a liaison librarian at the Business Library, City Campus, under a Call Travelling Fellowship in 2011. Annie visited 8 academic libraries in the USA to investigate how these libraries have used mobile devices and technologies to improve their services. And Annie is going to speak about mobile thinking, service improvements at academic libraries. And sorry, Annie, I'll need to...
That's okay, thank you. I'll try and mic.
Thank you.
actually been down to the library trying to get my iPad to work, thinking that I can go paperless, but no, it didn't work, so I'm back to using the good old faithful backup paper. How do I wear this? Okay. Good afternoon all. Thank you to the organizers for giving me this opportunity to speak about my travels in the States, which I undertook in April of this year with a grant from CORE. I've been to 8 universities within about 2 weeks, so it was quite a very busy trip and quite full on. I've made some rather interesting observations, and also there were some unusual observations. This is one of them, and more dogs, and a goldfish. And you'll be wondering why I'm talking about dogs and goldfish and what they have in common with the libraries that I've been to. Nothing much in common, except that they were all mobile and, you know. But I found them in the libraries. What happened is, at University of Virginia, they put a big fish tag in the library, and it was based on a student survey that they wanted something interesting, something moving in the library, and that's what they've got. So it's kind of a feature in the library there. Don't think you can hear me. Can you hear me? Yeah. The other thing is about the dogs. At another university, they had a dog out for loan. So, unfortunately, I understand that that loan item was withdrawn after less than one semester. So, for some reason, I don't know, late fines in dog food or whatever. Anyway, coming back to today's topic on rethinking reference services in the mobile world, you probably think, why did I choose mobile to go on this trip? And why are we looking at mobile technologies? This is what was in The Age last week. Some of you might have seen it. It reads that Google bet that its future and the future of other big internet companies lies in mobile computing. And then Larry Page went on to say in the article, computing is moving on to mobile. Even if I had a computer next to me, I will still be on my mobile device. And if that's what Larry Page is saying and what Google is saying, I think we need to keep an eye on mobile computing and how it will progress in the future, especially when there's talk now about Google paying $12 million for Motorola. So something's going to happen out of that. So if I'm just thinking that if Google does buy over Motorola, I think they will be able to speed up a lot in innovation with smartphones and things like that. There's further evidence about how mobiles have invaded our space. As you can see, there are more mobile phones in New South Wales and in Victoria than there are people. Mobile phone subscriptions are expected to reach 29 million, but the Australian population is estimated at about 22 million, which means that mobile subscriptions will have a market penetration of 120% of the Australian population. Over the next 5 years, I think we really have to keep an eye on these three big companies here, which dominates about 96% of the industry. That's Telstra, Singtel, and Vodafone. Because over the next 5 years, as we move towards 4G technology and as the market approaches subscriber saturation, the advancement in wireless internet networks will be the main driving force, and the development of new products and services driven by technological innovation will be much more affordable. And consumers like us are going to be quick to that. 46% of the telecommunication industry products and services segment revenue comes from mobile services. The drastic cut in mobile pricing in combination with an increasing demand for constant connectivity has seen consumers abandon their fixed line phones. As you can see, only 15% compared to 46% in mobile services. In addition, this is from Nielsen. He ran a survey on the global consumer survey. 28% of people are thinking of buying a smartphone in the next 12 months. Close behind, 24% thinking of getting a tablet. More than one-third of Australians used their mobile phones to get onto the internet in the past month, and 13% of them are using a device other than a smartphone. So I'm assuming it's a tablet that they're getting onto the internet. Educause study in 2010 indicated that 83% of undergraduates now own a laptop, 62% a handheld device capable of accessing the internet, while only 43% have got a desktop computer. Bearing in mind that those who have laptops may not be bringing them onto campus. I don't know about you, but in my case, my mobile phone goes with me nearly everywhere, so it has kind of like taken over the place of my laptop. And my laptop has gone onto my desktop, and I don't know where my PC is. So I think some of you would have gone through that stage where you don't have a PC at home and now using your laptop at home, that kind of thing. So that's a progression, I think. That's what's happening, and this is what's going to happen too. See, they don't have the laptop with them in campus, on campus, but they will always have their mobile phones, and it's quite easy to just whip up your mobile phone and, you know, check what's the latest instead of logging on, opening up the laptop. So that's what's going to happen. And also in passing, when I was in the States at the University of Virginia, they had a scheme lending out laptops, which I thought was great. You know, in fact, before I went, I thought we should have that kind of service at RMIT. We should lend out laptops. But they are now taking or withdrawing the service because of budget cuts, and they have to put that whatever funding there is into the Wi-Fi environment. So they're looking at putting more money into Wi-Fi. PC is not a priority. And same with, in fact, the Nanyang University in Singapore. It's nothing to do with that trip. It was a trip that I went last year. I went to Singapore and Hong Kong and had a look at some libraries as well, on my own, all on holidays. And in Nanyang, they are expecting students to have 100% ownership of their laptop or their notebook. And if they don't have one, they are giving out financial loans to students to get a laptop or a notebook. So in Nanyang Technological in Singapore, they hardly have any PCs around. The other interesting observation is that even though people with the 62% of them with the mobile phones, 65% are more likely to text, 65% of the teens are more likely to text than talk to their friends. It's an interesting behavior of the in teens nowadays. They won't talk to you, but they will text you. So, how should we be approaching such opportunities? So we talked about innovation and then competition of the telcos and how it's now more affordable. And connectivity is the other big thing. I think, in fact, the key reason why mobiles are changing the face of information is their connectivity. That's my belief. And so how do we make use of such opportunities? SMS reference is one of them. There are other services. And I've got down here SMS versus face-to-face versus email versus voice call. And then when I was typing it up and was thinking, maybe I shouldn't put the word S versus. Maybe it should be SMS and face-to-face and email and all of the above. I think it's like an additional point of reference service. It can't be exclusive of the other. And the other consideration too is about the level of service that we can offer to the clients who come in via SMS. Will we be able to offer the same level of service? Will it be the referencing service philosophy? Can we give them the same consistency in service philosophy across all these services? These are some of the things that I was thinking through. And of course, you are aware of the pros and cons of face-to-face, of email and voice call. each have got its own benefits and its disadvantages as well. At the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and also New York University, they ran the SMS service for a couple of years now. They started off first with a dedicated device. They bought a BlackBerry Pearl and they got a contract, unlimited text contract thing or a plan. And they started training the staff, probably about 8 to 14 staff, on texting etiquette. You know, what you do, what you don't do, that kind of thing, and how to limit to 160 characters and stuff like that. But after 18 months, the service kind of outgrown itself, and then they have to go on to an application which is on the web. And they use Library Help, which is a similar kind of application to RefTracker. Some of you are using RefTracker. So, yeah, so they've got the same capability there. The second model is actually on an Android phone, and what Library Help does is it routes the messages that comes in onto the Android phone onto the web environment. And what the librarians need to do is just to sign into the interface and they don't have to monitor the Android phone, because with the other device, it's a dedicated phone and it travels with the librarian wherever she goes, wherever he goes. And at the end of the day, it's just locked up in the cupboard, and you don't get the transcript for them as well. Whereas with Library Help, which is RefTracker as well, you get the transcripts that you can analyze. After 2 years, Alexa Pierce did an analysis of the transcript, qualitative transcript analysis, and there were a few myths being busted, I would call them. One of them is keeping transaction to as few texts as possible due to messaging costs. It was found out that some of the exchanges took as many as 16 messages, and that on average, the conversations takes about 4 to 6 messages in length for most conversations. So we're talking about using conversational skills with SMS reference as you would on a face-to-face conversation or on the phone conversation. So it's quite interesting to note that they weren't trying to keep down, or the people who are using it were not trying to keep down to the limitations of cost. I can still remember many years ago when I first got my mobile phone. This is quite embarrassing. It's one of those old Motorola phones with an antenna sticking at the corner, the right at the end there. I'm not sure whether you've seen one of them. The kind of phones that you can't really wear because it's sticking out, the antenna. So anyway, I got that, and it's a tiny little screen, and I used to remember trying to put as much text as I can within the 160 character. I send it off, and then all that I get from my son is just, okay. So I think, what? You know? So through the years, I'm beginning to chunk my conversation with him, like most mums, you know, it's like asking him about this and that and all that. So you ask one question and then you wait for a reply and then ask. It's kind of like a conversation going on. So my use of texting has kind of evolved as well, and trying to work with how people respond to me. So I'm not trying to limit everything into one. So the conversations these days are slightly different from back in those days. So today's talk, what I'm trying to say is that it's not about Apple versus Android, or about iPhone, about iPad and things like that. It's not even probably about the Google phone that's coming on. I think what I'm trying to say is we need to consider how our users are using them and what they need. How are they coming into our library space? And how they operate and how they study best. Should we be offering the service when they are at their peak hours, which is between 11 p.m. and 4 a.m., and that's when we should be offering the service? What kind of questions are they asking? Do they require the electronic resources that we think that need, that requires authentication? And you know the problem is getting authentication on a phone and then waiting for it. I think it's might not be what they want. So are we prepared for them? In other words, can we use whatever existing resources that we have to cater for what they need? One of them that I found quite interesting was the use of iPods. They use iPods for the information literacy session. They load it and, you know, listening to it instead of attending a class. This has now come in to Australia, Google Voice. It was very popular in the States. When I was there, it was Google everything, Google this, Google that. And I'm glad that this is finally coming into Australia. Obviously, we haven't got that many features as the Americans would have, but what basically it does is, if you've got a Gmail account, you can log in and you can use that to get onto the landline or the mobile line quite cheaply. I think the rates are very competitive. So, and they also have a video chat. We're looking at see how that would be with Skype, maybe making Skype redundant. I don't know, that's a question about that as well. But you can use this, and that's what they have done, the smaller libraries. They use Google Voice to monitor SMS referencing, and they also have a transcript. So what it does is converting the text or the voice call into text format. Thinking through about SMS referencing again, it's only one service. There are other services that we can consider. Looking at the demographics of our students, our location, our campus, suburb versus city campuses and things like that, and whether your students have got smartphones, what services do users want? And I've got there also collaboration. It would be good if we could get together and offer a rather cost-effective way to have longer hours and also to reach a wider user community. There were four universities in the North Carolina region that came together and formed a consortium of some sort, and they have used Google Voice as well as MyInfoQuest to collate the data and analyze the data. So it would be quite interesting if we can get hold of their paper to read how that analysis went. It's called MyInfoQuest. Are we ready? How can we keep up? I think playtime is important. Spending 30 minutes every day, if we can, to keep up with the software. Management need to accommodate such challenges and be flexible in adopting new ways of providing services. I think it's not enough for staff to just monitor, but staff need to be engaged and experiment to stay in the game. So based on current growth trends, about half the mobile phones in use will be smartphones or mobile devices capable of accessing the internet, which means the default access to the internet in the near future will be from smartphones. Again, I'll be ready. I'm going to quote this, I'm going to read this from Libraries and the Mobile Revolution, an article by Jacobs in 2009. This is what he said. Academic libraries have the reputation of thinking long and hard, debating all of the fine points before deciding to implement a new technology or technology-based service, sometimes missing the peak of the trend. I'm not sure whether we have missed the peak, but that's a thought for you. Going on to other services that I found, there was tweeting. They call it Tweet Ask Ref, and you can tweet about, you know, the savvy librarians can tweet about what's happening in the library updates, on campus and things like that. I've also downloaded some screenshots of mobile phones of the libraries. I mean, you could put four, and probably you can't see them very well, so I've listed them down for you. These are the common services that they're running. I'll speak on a couple of them because I'm running out of time. Duke Card, it's a monitoring credit facility that you use to buy and pay for your fines and pay for your coffee and things like that. The other one of interest will be webcams. This is a very popular service that you can get on the phone, because what happened is they are using existing webcams at strategic location in the coffee shop, in the library. And if you want to go and join the coffee queue, you want to check now, how long is the coffee queue? Should I go? Should I wait? And things like that. So it's really popular. And also the other thing is that I think they got it on around bus stops to see if there's people at the bus stop. I don't know. But it's a service that I thought was quite... we've got to be careful, you know, because of security, the boys checking out the girls and things like that, you know. So it's very common there. The other one is Wolf Walk. Wolf Walk is actually a location-aware campus map. It's an application that includes a location-aware campus map and a photo viewer for browsing historical photographs. I'll show you what it is. That's Wolf Walk app. It asks you where you are, and wherever you are, it will come up with a historical photograph of that particular place, and you can look at it by a particular decade. It's not augmented reality, it's not that. They are making use of digital collection, again, existing resources, existing collection, they're making use of that and putting on the phone and kind of mismatch it there. This is more interesting, it's very simple. Don't have to talk much about it. In fact, I won't speak too much about it because one of my colleagues at RMIT, he's going to talk about it at Bala next year, and I don't want to take away his thunder. So I'll let him talk about that. But if you have got a phone capable of scanning, feel free to scan. I've got their contact details because I've heard someone say that they don't have a phone, and whenever they see this, they think they're missing out on some of secret code. Are we part of a secret society? So it's not a secret society and it's not a secret code, then that's why I've got there. That's got my contact details. If you can scan that, I see somebody doing that. It's just my business card. It saves me giving up my business card to all of you. So that's what it is. And you can use this freely in your library. It's very easy to set up. And I've seen that being used in some of the university libraries in the States. During my networking time in the evening when I was talking to them over dinner, I found that the public libraries tend to have more interesting use of QR codes. Really interesting, the public libraries is another thing to look at altogether. And this is probably might not be able to see it well. It's my poor photography. I can't seem to have a good camera for that. This is a huge screen, a glass screen, showing you where the computers are available. It's touchscreen, interactive. If you're looking for your group, your study group, your tutorial, whatever, it tells you where that group is. It's called a group finder. And then it shows you where they are located, where the restrooms are, where the labs is, where the photocopy machine is, and you can actually find them there. The reason why I'm showing you this is because it's actually available on their mobile phone, but it's too small for me to take a screen dump of that, and that's why I'm doing a photograph of what I see of all these big screens, huge screens, located along corridors, along next to the lift as well, and at entrances. So I thought this was really useful. And that's Wolf Line, not Wolf Walk. Wolf Walk is historical photographs. Wolf Line talks about the bus that's going to come, the next shuttle bus that's going to come. It's using geo tracking, and so it's another thing that's quite interesting. And again, in Singapore, they used this last year to track their buses coming into the city, and you can tell from your phone. Oh my goodness, the next bus is coming in 2 minutes and you dash off and things like that. So I think that's quite useful. A short little summary on tablets. I didn't see much of it being used in terms of referencing service other than people using it for roving and all that. But anyway, tablet ownership is going to increase from 8% to 24% this year. And that's why I thought I'd call it the year of the tablet. So we'll see. Most of us are, wanting to buy a tablet in the next 12 months. at the universities I was talking about, they got in, like say for example in NC State, they bought in the 25 or 30 iPads when the first shipment came in, and they loaned it out to the students. Five of them were given to students on the condition that they block about their daily use of the iPad, how they use it, and then they look at their block and they try and do analyze that. Currently, NC State is running a real-time data collection about how students are using the physical space and services, and the software that they have developed is called SUMA, a Mobile Space Assessment Toolkit. And with e-readers too, Duke University ran a very successful program, lending out 36 Kindles. They started in 2009. There's been a long waiting list for Kindle. What they do is the Kindles are cataloged and the books, the titles are preloaded onto the Kindle. So when you do a search, you're searching the Kindle with the titles on them, preloaded. Literature, novels, Terry Pratchett, Stephanie Meyer, the kind of books, not textbooks, but they're still finding it very popular. I heard that they're not going to buy any more Kindles. Instead, they're going to add more titles onto the Kindles. That's what they're going to do. So as e-readers continue to evolve, the service needs to be refreshed as industry standards is going to merge and technical capabilities is going to grow. So it's worth reviewing probably every 6 months. Oops, sorry. Just a very quick, to finish off very quickly, things that I've seen. Nothing to do with mobile, but to do with technology and how they have made use of space. In a corner of the library, in fact, it's not a corner, it's a big room, like this room here. They call it the sandbox, and they put in all this new technology for you to experiment and play with. And this is the perceptive pixel media wall that students and staff can use, you know, like the Minority Report. Some of you have seen that, or the CSI kind, and they use the layering of stuff, so it's really, really nice. With urban planning or city planning and anatomy. Horizon Report in 2011 saying that gesture-based computing and game-based computing might be the next thing in 4 to 5 years' time. So I've got a photo of Katie Donahue from NC State, and here she is playing Connect in the sandbox. And they have also put in three tables, Microsoft tables. So the other thing that's quite interesting is the number of cafes in libraries in the States. Huge cafes. When you walk through the door, the library door, the first thing I noticed was this aroma, this rich coffee aroma. I'm not a coffee drinker, I'm a tea drinker, but the smell is just, it's just fantastic. And I don't see any books, but I saw a huge coffee shop. What they have done too is right at the far wall, I'm not sure if you can see, right at the far wall there, there's this huge screen. It's actually four monitors, but you can, like this, four monitors, but you can have it into one screen. And they have international news looping. And same in Singapore and Hong Kong. They have got international news, and it's interactive, it's digital news. You can select the newspaper that you want, the one in Singapore, you can select the newspaper, and it loops. So I thought that was a very interesting feature of how to use technology in your library. I just want to finish off very quickly by saying don't panic. It's not too late to start, it's never too late, and you can always start small with whatever resources that you have. You have the ref tracker, you have a phone, you can start off with a phone, with SMS, and we don't have Millennium, but I think some of you guys would use Millennium. Then there's a feature there in Millennium that you have a voice call where you have the ability to start on the SMS service. I think it's about testing the water and then review the situation every 6 months so that we don't miss the peak. We were talking about the peak the other slides earlier. And to keep in touch with what are the new features that are going to come in. And a quote from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Douglas Adams was saying in Chapter 3, that somebody who can stay in control of virtually any situation is somebody who is said to know where his or her towel is. And I put their smartphone. Thank you very much. Yes. I think that's how they started. Initially, it was started off as wanting users to have a play with new technology in the library, and they didn't realize that demand was so great. So that's how it sort of grew. And now they're getting in Nooks as well. Not in that university, no, but I've been reading some literature. I think you've heard of CoSmart. Yes, so that's something that we can look at. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are there any other questions? Okay, so I might leave it there. Thank you very much, Amy.